Called him a man. April 1st, 2011, Washington, D.C., planet Earth, third planet from the sun. A great place to be. Everything's all right. Everything's fine. It's all good. There's no problem. Try not to get worried. Try not to turn on to problems that upset you. Everything's all right. It's all good. Everything's all right. Barack Obama is here to save the day. Our illustrious, wonderful, great, and wise president is here to save us. Today we got some great news on the job front. The job number has gone down to 8.8%, which seemed to be good news, except that it doesn't call into question the number of people who just gave up looking for work. Oh, sure, it's a great number, and I appreciate it. And I don't want to be nitpicky. I won't be. It's a great number, and I appreciate it. Is Obama claiming credit? It would seem to me that the numbers started to go down after Republicans took the House and put the kibosh on all this reckless spending and some of Obama's outlandish, outrageous, unconstitutional, socialist, Marxist, communist regulations and programs. It would seem to me that the timing is just right. Try not to get worried. Everything's all right. It's going to be fine. Everything's all right. Do we have the resources?
There will be poor always, pathetically struggling. Look at the good things you've got. Think while you still have me, move while you still see me. You'll be lost. We'll be right back.
Everything's all right.
Everything's all right. Yes, everything's all right.
It's all right. It's all good. Relax. Close your eyes and relax. Everything's all right. There's a new doctrine, the Obama doctrine, the Responsibility to Protect Act. It sounds pretty good, doesn't it? It sounds nice. It sounds just about right about what America's all about. Except when you think about it, when you have a president who, or an administration that will, has the ability, has the right in the Constitution, according to the Constitution, to go to war for 90 days without the approval of Congress. Place that in the hands of someone who is irresponsible, ideological, inexperienced, and what you have is a disaster. You have a situation where the President of the United States, no matter who he is, Republican or Democrat, can go to war anywhere, anytime he wants, for 90 days without consulting Congress. So the Responsibility to Protect doctrine gives the President a free hand to send our troops anywhere he decides he wants. And what's troubling about this current situation in Libya is that the President of the United States sought the approval and the blessing of the United Nations while on vacation and completely bypassed the United States Congress. I wonder if any of you listening find that to be just the slightest bit troubling. If the President of the United States can bypass Congress and go to the United Nations for their approval to send troops or our military into combat, not making a phone call to key congressional leaders, not speaking to anyone in the Senate Armed Services Committee, not just going straight to the United Nations, what does that say to our sovereignty as a nation? You know what? Once again, I blame George W. Bush. I blame George Bush for all of this mess. When Barack Obama blames George Bush, it's ludicrous. It's scapegoating. It's the inability to lead and take responsibility. But here's where I blame George Bush. George Bush sucked all to be damned during the last part of his administration. And that allowed, that opened the door for a great many Americans to decide that we needed to go in a different direction. And that opened the door for this cowardly, no balls, no spine, no backbone, inept guy to assume the role of the presidency. George Bush, you know I love you, George, you know that. But you're responsible for Barack Hussein Obama's ascension to the presidency of the United States. If you had been just a bit more bending, a bit more yielding, had you not sent our troops into Iraq, which I don't believe we should have been there, frankly, if you hadn't done these things, Barack Obama would have never been president of the United States. Now, This is the only time that anyone will ever hear me blame George Bush for anything. George, you're responsible for this clown being president of the United States. No, I don't believe that George Bush was incompetent, as some say. I don't believe he was stupid or an idiot or not very smart. Because I tell you one thing right here and right now, he would have to be, as stupid as some people claim that he is, he would have to stumble into luck more times than is humanly possible to attend Harvard and Yale, to own his own baseball team, his own business, become governor, a fighter pilot in between that, flying the F-4 Phantom, which is really hard to fly, I'm going to tell you that right now, and all the other things that he done, and ascend to the presidency of the United States and serve 2 terms. A guy that dumb would have to be awful lucky. Y'all heard me? So this is the only time that you're ever going to hear me blame George Bush for anything. Now back to the Responsibility to Protect Act. I'm going to go ahead and let Eric Bowling explain it to you.
There's a military doctrine called Responsibility to Protect, and President Obama used it to justify going into Libya. It basically calls for the UN and other groups to invade a nation's borders when its people are threatened. And one of the biggest promoters of this doctrine is mega-liberal George Soros. This can't be good. Earlier this evening, I asked Aaron Klein from WorldNet Daily to lay out the connection between Soros and the White House on this one.
In fact, it goes quite deep. Soros is the primary funder, one of 3 non-governmental funders of the main organization. It's called the Global Organization to Protect, Responsibility to Protect. George Soros, one of 3 primary sponsors of this organization, whose founders actually wrote the doctrine. And it turns out that Samantha Power, President Obama's national security advisor, a special advisor on human rights issues, has gone to multiple panels with some of the founders of this doctrine that come from this George Soros-funded organization, and she was incredibly instrumental in helping President Obama, according to reports, make the decision to go to war in Libya.
Look, I get it. George Soros, not a great guy. Shorted the American economy in stocks and derivatives and benefited when we fell apart. Made a ton of money, billions of dollars on that. I get it. He's no friend of ours, no friend of mine. But just because he sits on a board with Samantha Power, does that mean he has her ear? And does that mean, by de facto, Obama has Soros's ear through Samantha Power?
Soros is the main sponsor, the main under one of 3 of Responsibility to Protect of the Global Forum that actually wrote this act. So, yes, he's incredibly influential. And a lot of the people on the board, by the way, also sit on other organizations like one called the International Crisis Group, which has been very strangely involved in the unrest and supporting the unrest in the Middle East and North Africa. Soros is all over this. Samantha Power may be one of the ways that the decision-making process indeed went up to the highest levels of the Obama administration, and the United States acted as a test to this doctrine, Responsibility to Protect, in Libya. But again, concerned that this doctrine can be applied to other countries, maybe even one day the United States of America, because the International Criminal Court has in the past accused us of atrocities in Iraq and Afghanistan.
All right. Well, Aaron Klein, we're going to have to leave it there, my friend. Thanks for joining us. Aaron Klein, WorldNet Daily. Thank you, sir.
Let's understand what the Responsibility to Protect Act means. It means that if the United States of America decides that we can send in troops and depose a ruler or a president because we don't think that he's treating his people right, then it's conceivable that another country could file a grievance against the United States at some point, or any other country, and ask or demand that UN troops or troops be sent in to deal with the situation. It's a very slippery slope. Now, of course, I don't agree with Minister Louis Farrakhan or Al-Malik Allah Shabazz. I don't agree with those guys when they say that we shouldn't be messing with Brother Gaddafi, because they couldn't care less about the Responsibility to Protect Act. They're concerned about a black man going to war with another black man and, you know, all that black stuff. So they're concerned with all that. But I wonder, why is the United States of America, why did this administration send troops in to deal with an internal matter between a sovereign nation? And they're saying it's a kinetic insurgency and urgency, blah, 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 la-di-da type of deal. And I say it's a civil war, and no one asked us to intervene or participate from inside that country. And we really shouldn't be there doing a damn thing. We really shouldn't. But we are. We're there. Let's listen to a little bit more.
Frank Gaffney is with us from the Center for Security Policy, which searches for emerging threats to national security. Frank, you saw that report. How involved is George Soros in this Libyan attack, would you say?
I think it's hard to say with precision, but I find that a lot of places where things are going on that are fundamentally contrary to our interests, George Soros is involved. And you can argue that that's cause and effect. You can argue that it's just coincidence. But I think we've got to appreciate that, particularly when it comes to trying to get the United States government to adopt this kind of open-ended policy to basically do what other people, as President Obama put it the other day, volunteer us for, is something that would be completely consistent with Soros's idea that you know, we ought to diminish the United States as a superpower, and we ought to be raising up people who are hostile to us.
Now,
very troubling.
Soros sits on some boards with Samantha Power. Samantha Power happens to be an advisor to President Obama. Is that scary?
Well, look, it's not just that they are on boards together. It is that they are intellectual and ideological soulmates, as are many of the people who comprise the Obama administration.
Frank,
that's worrying because they're pushing us in a very dangerous direction.
Financially benefited from the fall of the U.S. dollar.
Among others. He's cratered a whole bunch of economies and destroyed some nations in the process. As I say, the guy is, I think, fundamentally working at cross purposes with American national security interests. In this particular instance, I think the jury is still out, but writ large, there's no doubt about it, and his connections to a number of folks in the Obama administration, not just Samantha Powers, but the people who are, I think, at the sort of cutting ideological edge of the administration, is what I worry about big time.
All right, Frank, don't move. Stay right there. I want my next guest to join us.
Okay, a little bit of background on George Soros. Soros was born of Jewish parents in Budapest in 1930. As Georgi Schwartz. When young Georgi Schwartz enrolled at the Fabian Socialist London School of Economics in 1949, he changed his surname to Soros. And at the London School of Economics, he became friends with a Marxist philosopher, Sir Karl Popper. And Karl Popper was the founder of the Association of Socialist School Students and, of course, the author of the 1945 book, The Open Society and Its Enemies. In 1956, in an open society of America, of which George Soros wishes to expand into a borderless society, young Georgie arrived on Wall Street with $5,000 and quickly demonstrated a knack for investing other people's money. Soros soon became, or soon came to be called, the greatest money manager in the world. By satisfied clients of his multi-billionaire international hedge fund called the Quantum Fund. Today, Forbes magazine ranks him as the 28th richest person in the United States, with an estimated fortune worth around $7 billion. In 1993, Soros established the U.S. branch of his Open Society Institute as a tax-free foundation to support his socialist foundation in Central and Eastern Europe. The president of the Open Society Institute is, what's his name? Iron Neer. I think I remember it correctly. Who is the director of the Socialist League for Industrial Democracy, who personally created the radical group Students for a Democratic Society in 1959. Doesn't that sound benign? Students for a Democratic Society? It just sounds so normal. And though Soros, he likes to be considered a stateless statesman, Soros is in fact more accurately described as the godfather of world socialism. Because through his Open Society Institute, Soros funds an army of socialist organizations that advocate abortion, open borders, amnesty for illegal aliens, and a global currency, prevention of global warming, and a world poverty tax. Again, two of Obama's recent legislations, the Global Poverty Act and the Climate Change Bill, are both pieces which are consonant with George Soros' agenda. Indeed, George Soros and Barack Obama are friends. George Soros has met with Barack Obama in the Oval Office no less than four times, probably more, given this administration's well, they say that they're all for transparency. Remember that word, transparency? Well, they say that, and then they're the most secretive White House in recent memory, according to records. Now, Obama's socialist connections explain why he has a libertine view on sexual matters such as abortion and homosexuality. One of Obama's first actions in office was to issue an executive order authorizing federal funds for pro-abortion groups who operate globally. Obama supports the Freedom of Choice Act, which would make abortion an entitlement that the government could not limit. And this falls in the line with the socialist agenda of George Soros, or better known as the puppeteer, who pulls the strings of his puppet, Barack Obama. Among Soros' demands are to make abortions freely available and to legalize gay marriage. Soros also demands full rights for illegal aliens and felons, as well as legislation of euthanasia for the infirm. And oh yeah, Soros demands the end of U.S. global supremacy through a borderless society. Unless we wake up soon, folks, our infirm nation will soon be put to an eternal sleep by Barack Hussein Obama and George Soros, both socialists who now run a Marxist White House. Let's listen to a little bit more of Soros' agenda.
Tensions hitting the boiling point in the Middle East. What's next? What region, what country is ready to erupt in violence? Please welcome attorney Yasser Tabara, a human rights lawyer and community activist who's an expert on the region. Thank you for joining us. So what do you make of this? What do you make of all this going on in Libya? Boy, we're seeing a lot of scary things going on there. And for us in America, not used to seeing some of the things. We're seeing people accusing Gaddafi of raping them. We're seeing journalists being taken and not seen for days at a time. Sexual assaults on other journalists. It's a scary time.
It is. It is in terms of the context of what's happening in Libya at the moment. But I think you have to kind of take a step back and take a look at the larger context. I mean, what's been referred to as unrest in the Middle East is really a sweeping pro-democracy movement. I mean, people here in the United States, there's been this point of view
Mr. Jabbar, on your show. Is it in fact a pro-democracy movement? Because
When I see Libya,
allow me, Iran, how is that pro-democracy? I mean, there was nothing pro-democratic about what went on in Iran, and they were slaughtering citizens, their own citizens.
There are no mass protests and demonstrations by the Iranian people at this moment in time. What I'm talking about is what started in Tunisia about 3 months ago, when the entire Tunisian population took it to the streets and decided to hold their leader of 30 years accountable. And this is a movement of
non-ideological
movement, not Islamist movement.
I hate to cut you off, sir.
By millions of youth.
I hate to cut you off. Guys, take this package. We found this today. It was sent to us, and we want you to take a look and maybe react to this. Take a look what some other people think is really going on in the Middle East.
CBN News has obtained an exclusive copy of a propaganda video that's reportedly been approved at the highest levels of the Iranian government. It's called The Coming Is Near, and it describes current events in the Middle East as a prelude to the coming of the mythical 12th Imam, or Mahdi, the Messiah figure who Islamic scriptures say will lead the armies of Islam to victory over all non-Muslims in the last days.
Sir, do you want to comment on that, Mr. Tabara?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I'm not a spokesperson on behalf of the Iranian government. In fact, I take issue with much of the Iranian government's policies in terms of their policies in the region, in terms of their human rights records, in terms of what they do to their own people. And I truly hope for that wave of pro-democracy movement to infect the Iranian population and to take it to the streets themselves go towards a democratic regime.
I want to get Frank Gaffney in here. Frank, please, will you comment on this? I mean, is this outlandish or is this part of a belief that's spreading throughout the Middle East?
Look, what has just been said, that there is a democratic fervor that is going to translate into something that we would recognize as democratic is farcical. It is in fact the case that the people who are going to prosper out of this ferment, this revolutionary tumult, are going to be the Muslim Brotherhood and to some extent the Iranians, who Mr. Tabara says he doesn't support.
Now, make no mistake, all of the things that are going on right now in the Middle East, all the upheaval and uprising, is no coincidence. In fact, there are quite a few United States-based internet companies, YouTube, Google, Facebook, a lot of the social networking sites, who are openly advertising that young people go out and protest. Let's move. They go out and engage in a day of rage. Could that have something to do, these goings-on have something to do with the secret meeting that Obama had with Google and internet folks about 3 weeks ago? Speaking of that, I want to talk about all the folks that have their foot in the door at the White House. I'll call them Obama's masters. Yeah, there is a racist tone to that for those of you who are looking for it. Obama's masters. That have him tap dancing 24 hours a day when he's not on the golf course. His faithful cultist, his Kool-Aid drinkers, his entitlement junkies, his clueless supporters, they'll be the first to be stabbed and the last to realize it. Soros owns Obama, his administration, and essentially people like Soros, who are also involved, control America via its monetary system, its professions, its education system, its media culture. Did you ever wonder why the drive-by media, the state-run media, is in the tank for Obama? That they cannot bring themselves to criticize anything that he does? Because there's a plan. See, Obama is the puppet. Soros and others are behind the scenes pulling the strings, making sure that Obama is very seldom criticized for anything that he does, paying off the media, threatening, cajoling. It's the media culture and every other crucial piece of America's social infrastructure that is being controlled so that Obama has a clean path to do the things that Soros and his group want him to do. If an incumbent president doesn't play ball with George Soros, his political career is over, and Soros, as much as said so, just before the November elections, he said, and I quote, "Obama has lost control of the message, and if he can't accomplish what we want, then we'll just have to get someone else." Doesn't that sound a bit, I mean, these are his actual words. So that tells me, and it should say to you, that Obama is being controlled by George Soros and men like him. America voted for change, all right. The dog and pony show must have folks around the world laughing their asses off. From New York to London. Now let's take a quick look at Obama's cult group. The downtrodden black folks. Oh yeah. Long suffering. 400 years of slavery. Refused to let it go. Even though most black Americans, even homeless black Americans, live like kings in comparison to their ancestors who were brought here in shackles and were slaves for so long, suffered so harshly. And now you have a black man who can basically do whatever he wants, black man, woman, child, do whatever you want. Live your life however you want. Become rich, wealthy, and powerful beyond your wildest dreams. And yes, become president of the United States. And, oh yeah, no, Whitey's bad. Whitey's evil. Whitey is trying to keep a brother down. I can't get nowhere unless Whitey lets me. We suffered through 400 years of slavery. Blah, 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 blah. We didn't suffer a damn thing. Even those of us who were born in the 60s, I was born in 62. Even those who were born in the 60s grew up like I did. I tell you what, My folks back in the 40s, 30s, 20s, 1800s, they would look to me and think, I am so proud. Look at where my kin has come. Look how far he's come. And if they knew that I would ever hearken back to the days of slavery and start speaking as if I suffered all those years of slavery, because that's what most black folks do. They start feeling sorry for themselves, and then they start whining about how bad whitey treated not them, but generations before them, as if somehow it's affecting them. And then they hop into their Cadillacs or their Escalade or their Lexus and drive on down the road, headed off to that nice restaurant to get some nice food before they head back to their nice pad and their nice house and turn on that big screen TV and sit down on that plush couch and then go open up those leftovers that they just brought back from that fine restaurant, crab salad, crab meat, veggies, and just sit down and chill. Oh, but no, 400 years of slavery. Oh, it's still affecting me to this very day. Well, they chow down on that expensive crab meat and sit in front of that fine TV with that fine Escalade parked out in front with 20-inch rims. But no, no, no. Americans, blacks, give Obama a victory. They ain't give him nothing because, hell, black folks alone could not possibly elect Obama. The numbers would never work. Obama's plan for affirmative action, national health care, and 0-5 early care held out change for black folks. The woman who said that just after the election that she won't have to worry about paying her bills anymore, that she don't have to worry about paying her mortgage or her car note or putting gas in her car, because if she takes care of Obama, Obama's going to take care of her. I wonder if she's being taken care of right now by Obama. And what about the folks who stood in line in Detroit who wanted free gas? Not free gas, free checks, Obama money from Obama's stash. See, the entitlement mentality is out there. But the economic downturn, plus two wars and one on the way to deal with, black folks may have to wait for that change to come. The impressionable youth. American youth turn out in droves. They turned out in droves to vote for Obama. The youth were enamored with Obama's hope campaign, vague as it was. But many now believe that the youth will have their hopes dashed because Obama can't possibly deliver. And what was he delivering? He was never very specific about anything except hope and change. Hey, Bob, good to see you. Semper Fi. So, who's next? The anti-war left. Oh, well, so much for those guys, because Obama still has us in two wars and one on the way, a rumor of a war. Of course, when America goes halfway around the world and lays down armor on another country's citizens, that's not really a war, is it? It's a kinetic something or other. But I tell you one damn thing right here and right now, and I think Bob would agree with me here, if another country sent some armor over here and laid it down on New York City, Chicago, Miami, Atlanta, or even somewhere in Oklahoma, that's a war. Somebody's ass is going to get kicked. We call that war where I come from. Oh, yeah. So, but no. It's a word game. Because Obama and his administration and his minions believe that we're just so stupid that we don't actually know what a war is. So as long as he calls it something else, then it's not really a war. It's kind of like the Wizard of Oz. Oh, no. Don't mind what's over behind the curtain over here. You don't really see what you're seeing. What you're seeing is something else, and what you're doing is something else, and what I'm saying is another thing. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to in this Soros Obama Responsibility to Protect Act sequence. Because I think it's important that we go ahead and get that out of the way.
That is going to translate into something that we would recognize as democratic is farcical. It is in fact the case that the people who are going to prosper out of this ferment, this revolutionary tumult, are going to be the Muslim Brotherhood and to some extent the Iranians, who Mr. Tabara says he doesn't support. What we are unfortunately confronting, I'm afraid, is something that will be considerably worse from not only the perspective of American interests, but also from the perspective of the people most immediately involved. They're going to get theocracy, not democracy.
Mr. Tabara, are you sure these rebels, whoever end up taking over power in Libya, are you sure they're friends of ours?
Well, I'm hearing a larger question here, Eric. I'm hearing a question that puts the entire pro-democracy movement in the Arab world right now as a hostage to the Muslim Brotherhood, which is absolutely absurd. I was in Egypt. I came back about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I met with the revolutionaries down there. I've talked to the people that basically have access to the highest echelons of power. There's the propaganda that the scarecrow of the Muslim Brotherhood taking over these pro-democratic movements is absolutely absurd. It's undermining what's actually taking place. What I would like to point out is Mr. Gaffney got it right on Iraq,
well,
and he's again
on,
getting
sir,
it
sir,
right.
Listen,
got it wrong on Iraq, and now he's getting it right again.
We don't have time to go into depth on this, but I got to tell you any further in depth. I got to tell you, when you look at Iran, when you look at Yemen, when you look at Bahrain, we're not sure everything is quite pro-democracy yet, but we have to leave it there. I apologize.
Well, yeah,
we'll bring you guys both back for another segment at another time.
Thank you, Frank Gaffney, and
Tabara, for joining us tonight.
All right. It's all interesting because George Soros, the author of All Mischief, whom I am just this far from bestowing the Antichrist title on him rather than Barack Obama. I mean, dude has been screwing up countries and nations for the last 40 years. I mean, you got to be kidding. This guy is, if he's not the Antichrist, he's the damn devil.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to 900 Alpha. For those of you who have not been here, we're pleased to host this in this building. So I think people know we have the Authors at Google series, and we've attracted a lot of fantastic authors over the last 6 to 8 months when we've been doing this. And I think none as spectacular as this one, Mr. Soros, the author of 8 books, is here to talk about his latest book. Now, because of the prominence and interest in this author, we're doing a bit of an unusual Authors at Google, where we have our CEO, who needs no introduction, Eric Schmidt, who is here to interview. And so a new format, I'm pleased to introduce Mr. Eric Schmidt and Mr. George Soros.
Well, you know what? I was going to go ahead and play that Soros clip, but it runs rather long, so I decided I'm not going to go ahead and do that because I think I spoke too long and I can't play the clip. But let's move into the last segment of this show for tonight. Can Obama lose? Can Obama lose in 2012? Oh, yeah. It looks as though the economy is improving. But Can Obama lay claim to that improvement? Can Obama reap the credit for the slight improvement of the economy, for the slight job growth that we've seen and had recorded today? Or can this new optimism and job growth be attributed to the Republican Congress, the results of November 2010. I say it's the Republicans that deserve credit. Now, a failure in a complex system such as what we have here in the United States almost always involves a combination of factors that feed into one another to cause a breakdown. And as we watch Japan's tragic nuclear plant situation, the tsunami, the earthquake, I'm reminded of the near catastrophe at Three Mile Island in 79 when I was just 17 years old, and what the post-crisis analysis showed. If you recall, the Three Mile Island nuclear plant contained sophisticated safety measures and safeguards, and engineers considered a catastrophe or a catastrophic event to be highly unlikely, but a reactor meltdown nearly did happen. Why? Because of a mixture of engineering flaws, a human error, and bad luck. And you know what? The same is true for what happens in life. Whether it's an airplane crash, a disaster in a far-off corner of the globe, a medical error, or even a personal relationship gone bad. We've all been there. Some of us, several times. The loss we suffer in divorce, or perhaps at the end of a relationship, usually doesn't result from any one thing going wrong, but from a series of underlying issues that a couple never adequately addressed. These hidden issues can be inside our partner's heart or history, or they can be in our own. Some event or series of things happen that allow us to see one another and ourselves more clearly, and a loss is the result. Now, this phenomenon happens in politics as well, which brings me to the 2012 presidential contest. Contrary to what many people, many pundits and partisans might have you believe, a Democrat president rarely loses a reelection race. Only once in the past 120 years has a president from that party who sought a second term lost, and that was, of course, Jimmy Carter in 1980. Thus, the odds heavily favor President Obama if he decides to run again, and it looks like he will. So what combination of factors in this complex system of politics must come together to cause a catastrophe for Obama? Well, politically, that would inevitably result in his defeat. Let's look at it. You know, I came up with three today, and all have to be in place and reinforce each other for Obama to lose. First, the economy in 2012 has to be either stagnant or in decline. In the 10 key electoral states, especially the ones in the Midwest. And as he heads into the election, this would mean that the economy is creating very few net jobs in 2012, and that prices, including food and gas, are still rising, which seems like the trend is going up in those areas, but going slightly down in the employment area. Second, and this is really important, a new major international crisis arises that causes people to rally behind Obama because of his competent handling of it. And I emphasize the word new, major, and competent. Afghanistan and Iraq devolving again into a problem would not help Obama and actually may hurt him because our country has basically moved on from the situation in both places. Third, a Republican nominee has to emerge who has a charismatic, who is charismatic and is a very good communicator, which I don't really see right now. He has to also be in touch with the country's economic and social needs and is a new brand of GOP leader who many younger voters can connect with. Can you think of anybody? Can anybody think of anybody right now who fits that description? I can't. Not right now. Michelle Bachmann, hot as she is, well, she doesn't fit the bill. Certainly not Newt. I mean, I love him, but, you know, no. Not even, I mean, I can't think of anyone who right now would fit that bill. And they're going to have to. They're going to have to out-smile, out-speak, out-charm, out-con. They're going to have to be Chris Christie, and Chris Christie is not running. So who's there? Who's out there? If Chris Christie doesn't run, if Chris Christie runs, he'll give Obama a run for his money, at the very least. There has to be a Ronald Reagan. And we don't have a Ronald Reagan anymore. Now, if we had a Reaganist candidate, Obama would be done. But who out there fits the mold of a Ronald Reagan? Truly, he was one of a kind. He made America feel good about America. Barack Obama makes America feel bad about America. Say what you will about President Reagan, but he was a patriot and he made us all feel patriotic. I remember as a young Marine, just 17 years old, and I like to say that because I'm certainly not that anymore, but I'm like Al Bundy, who sits on the couch with his hands in his pants and talks about those three or four touchdowns he scored back in high school. So now I'm sitting here, not with my hands in my pants, don't even picture it, but I'm reminiscing about that young 17-year-old stud Marine who, when President Reagan took office, the first thing he did was give me a raise. His first order of business was to sign a pay raise for the United States military. Oh, yeah. There is no Reagan on the horizon. Not that I'm aware of. Not at this time. And if one is out there, he better damn well quick show up. Because damn. Now, all three of the factors that I just laid out must converge for Obama to lose. And two of them, at least two of them, need to drive his job approval down to a place, as I've suggested before, that makes it difficult for him to win. As anyone can see, these three elements don't include how much money the Democrat National Committee and Obama have at their disposal. How much cash the Republican National Committee or the Republican nominee raises, the quality of each campaign staff, and the legislative machinations of Congress, or the use of modern technology in the campaigns, such as Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and what have you. These are all tactical factors that ultimately will have little influence on whether Obama wins or loses. And Bob, USMC, says that Lieutenant Colonel Allen West would crush Obama. I'm not so sure, Bob, because Allen West has just come on the scene. He's just been elected. There isn't enough time. And I suppose if you count the Obama mode, the Jimmy Carter mode, where a seemingly unknown comes out of nowhere to capture the America's imagination and all of that. Maybe. I suggest that Alan West would crush Obama in a debate about America and the pride for America, because what really speaks to true Americans, especially those independents out there, is love of country, pride in this great nation. And Obama does not speak to that. I submit that standing up for this great country as a whole, American exceptionalism will do wonders for any candidate. Alan West is a good man, a true conservative, well-spoken, intellectually sound, charismatic even. But right now, he's just come on the scene. Indeed, so has Marco Rubio, whom I believe could challenge Obama if he had come on the scene 4 years ago. But right now, these guys, in my opinion, they need a little bit more seasoning. Just a bit more. I say Marco Rubio after 2012. I say Alan West after 2012. Right now, it would be very difficult. The only conservative politician who could come close right now, I believe, would be Chris Christie. The only neophyte, the only guy who's not been on the scene is Christie, because Christie speaks plain. He is the anti-Obama in every single way. The economy and an international crisis. And a good, well-spoken, charismatic, Reagan-esque candidate. Put those three together, and maybe, just maybe, we can get rid of Obama. Send his ass home, wherever that is, because it's really hard to tell. If inflation hits us, Obama will lose. No doubt. Inflation, high gas prices, which will domino effect to everything else we do in the United States. Everything we use, do, see, whatever we do, gas prices have a lot to do with that, which is probably one of the reasons why Obama wants us to use less gas. Hey, the show's coming to an end. It has been a great week. I thank Bob and everyone else who's listening. Folks who are listening on their computers, who download on iTunes, and who listen on their computers. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate you being here. I hope you have a great weekend. I hope everybody else has a wonderful weekend. God bless you all. Thank you so much for being here. Could we start again, please? I mean, come on.
Message home. before it gets too frightening, we ought to call a halt. So could we start again, please?
I'd be living to see you.
So they'll still talk about us when we've died.